Seekers, Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. It's about 7 past the hour. We have a little bit of sound for you tonight, not very much, from today's House hearing, the Committee on Energy Independence hearing on oil company profits and subsidies. We listened to a little bit of this today, especially when Jay Inslee, Democrat from Washington, and Ed Markey, Democrat from Massachusetts, made some opening remarks. And later on, when I think it was the chief gouger from ExxonMobil, one of their vice presidents. Oh, God, these people look just so gray and plastic. But he sat there and, you know, just gave back what the committee members were giving him, which was a lot of mouth. And it struck us being Kathy and me when we were listening to this today, that the audacity of the members of Congress to question a corporation like ExxonMobil? Are you kidding? ExxonMobil buys and sells members of Congress as easily, as easy as radar, Curley said one time. And the juxtaposition of these energy czars sitting there, these oil company potentates, and this absolutely emasculated, powerless members of Congress sitting in front of them. It was funny. It was bizarre. It was sad. It was just an absolute photograph of what's going on in the country today. And nothing's going to come of these hearings, of course. You know, when you have an industry that made $140 billion in profit last year and still sucks $18 billion in tax credits out of the American taxpayer, that is chutzpah. That is a brass balls. I mean, that is beyond belief. And to think that any congressional committee is going to put an end to that, Bush is in Russia. Or he's traveling around that part. Is he in Russia yet? I don't know. Prairie 2 sent me this. It's a press release from Reuters. While visiting the Kremlin, Putin invited Bush to his private dining room. When the waiter approached, Putin told him he'd have the steak. The waiter nodded and said, "And the vegetable?" And Putin said, "He'll have the steak, too." Shitaboom. Hillary Clinton today. Last night we ran an excerpt of Barack Obama, and in fairness,
I've almost located the mystery clip.
No, I want the one that we played right before the program. That's the one I wanted. Yeah, okay. Not the one where she compares herself to Rocky. Oh, you're going to try to find that one too. Well, Kathy is diligently hunting. We want to play this one for you first. She was speaking today in Philadelphia to a meeting of the AFL-CIO honchos, and I want you to listen. I want you to listen to this speech, and I want you to listen to what happens at the end. You ready?
We're going to give Americans a secure retirement, and we're going to make sure Social Security is safe and solvent. You know, none of this will be easy. But nothing worth doing is easy. I was thinking about that looking at the sheet metal workers today. How many mistakes were made before that perfection was reached?
What?
How much work had to be done before you felt confident in trusting that new assignment to that young sheet metal worker?
What?
We could go through every kind of work that any of you do and say the same thing. Well, it's true about our government, too. It's not going to be easy, but we can make it happen.
Uh-huh.
Again, as Dr. King said, either we go up together or we go down together. Remember, Jerry, he spoke those words 40 years ago this week to sanitation workers on strike in Memphis. Members of Ask Me Local 1733. He urged them to move on, and that's what I urge us. There isn't anything we can't do as Americans once we start acting like Americans again. Once we roll up our sleeves and we get to work. Some of you have heard me say this before, and I'll say it again. It took a Clinton to clean up after the first Bush, and it'll take a Clinton to clean up after the second Bush. And with your help, that is exactly what we're going to do. Thank you, and God bless you, and God bless America.
Jesus God, why did she do that? Why does she do that? Hillary, when your audience is applauding, shut up! Just let them applaud. You don't have to try to scream out of the applause! That is so scary.
I've never heard a politician scream, God bless America! Into a microphone before. I don't know, you know, it makes Howard Dean look like nothing. I found the other clip, by the way.
Oh, you have? All right. Well, she's now taken to comparing herself to Rocky Balboa, and also in Philly, where the film about Rocky was set. You know, I mean, come on, everybody's seen Rocky. She said, "Well, have you got it here? You got the clip?" We do have the clip. All right. Anyway, one thing that she has to remember is. Sylvester Stallone, the actor who played Rocky, is backing John McCain. And it may be noted, the film ends with Rocky's defeat by Apollo Creed. Happens to be a black guy. Apollo Creed is Philadelphian for Barack Obama. So here we go. Here is Hillary Clinton with her Rocky speech, and I think we have it. Yes, we do. Are we ready? Have we got some sound?
You know what it's like to stumble. I know what it means to get knocked down, but I've never stayed down. I never will, and neither will you, and neither will America. We're on the comeback trail as a country. Now, Senator Obama says he's getting tired of the campaign. His supporters say they want it to end. Well, could you imagine if Rocky Balboa had gotten halfway up those art museum stairs and said, well, I guess that's about far enough. That's not the way it works. Let me tell you something. When it comes to finishing the fight,
yeah.
Rocky and I have a lot in common. I never quit. I never get up. And I know that we're going to make it together, not just up those stairs, but we're going to climb that mountain to a better day for America.
Oh, God.
We have so much work to do. And we won't get there if we quit or we walk away. We'll get there by staying and fighting and standing up for what we believe in. But I don't need to tell any of you this. No one knows better than organized labor how important it is to have a fighter on your side.
Scream.
When you send someone to the bargaining table, you need the strongest, toughest, most determined person you've got. Not someone who's just going to talk about problems, but someone who will roll up her sleeves and get the job done for you.
Yeah! Yeah! Just don't forget, Hillary, that Rocky got his ass kicked by a black man. I mean, you are aware of that, right? I mean, right? It wasn't until the second movie that, you know.
Now, I have to say, in her defense, I will vote for her if she swallows a dozen raw eggs from a pitcher and starts punching some meat.
Be careful, Kathy. Oh, you mean like he did in the slaughterhouse where
he worked? Yeah, in the meat cooler.
Meat packing, where he worked, right.
When she starts punching meat and eating raw eggs, she's got my vote.
Be careful. There are censors out there. All right, well, there's our little clip of Hillary today. When we come back, we have more fun and treats for you this evening. So, what did she say? I never get up? She did say that in that clip. I never get up. I think she said, I think she meant to say, I never stay down. But she said, I never get up. It's getting sillier and sillier and crazier and crazier. Oh, and by the way, I've decided, after doing a little research and reading something Chris Floyd wrote, that my callers last night, John from all over the place, and my emailer, Lance from Manhattan, are right. I'm not going to vote for either one of these clowns. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
Clinton to clean up after the second Bush, and with your help, that is exactly what we're going to do. Thank you, and God bless you, and God bless America.
David writes in, there you go again, Mike, with your Hillary bashing. This does nothing to help the Democratic Party, does it? Maybe I will catch you later, then maybe not. But you don't care. David and his last name. Oh, God, David. Listen, nothing is going to help the Democratic Party. Nothing. We have Nancy Pelosi. She's a Democrat. Look what she's doing. We have Harry Reid. He's a Democrat. Look what he's doing. And we have the Clinton-Obama axis. And look what they're doing.
She's bashing herself. She has some help from Geraldine Ferraro and her husband, but we're not making these things up.
I know, but that's lost. The fact that we are playing this kind of stuff makes us Hillary bashers.
I understand.
You know, or
truth hurts.
Wait till I go through this thing here in a minute or two that Chris Floyd wrote. Then all the Obama supporters are going to call me slime and a bastard and a traitor and destroyer of the Democratic Party.
We might as well go on vacation. Go away. Just leave.
Oh, I'm drinking some of this. What is this tonight? What do we have here?
It's the last few remaining beans that we have left of the Kona Espresso.
Man, this is espresso. This is from superbeans.com, which is the only place we got a coffee. This is really good. Hold on.
When we get the coffee, sometimes it gets
sometimes
lost
it winds
in the mail.
Up. Yeah, it winds up at the home office in Phoenix.
Hope you guys are enjoying our coffee up there.
George in Seattle writes, Mike, you just don't understand Hillary Clinton. In order to be acceptable to Republicans, Hillary Clinton is trying to become a full-fledged neocon. The trouble is, she doesn't have it quite right just yet. Like the neocons, Hillary Clinton has learned to create her own reality by telling a series of lies, but she still hasn't learned to keep on lying after the lies have been exposed. A true neocon will tell a lie and stick to that lie no matter what the facts are. And this is what appeals to Republicans. Come on, Mike, have faith in Hillary Clinton. All she needs is a little more practice to become a proper neocon. Then she will have all the necessary qualifications to be our next president. Oh, that's right. We're supposed to be voting for a Democrat. Never mind, George in Seattle. This is from Rita, a disappointed listener. Mike, driving home tonight, I heard you once again bashing Hillary, and I couldn't help but to finally tell you that I've had it up to my neck, and I can't bear it anymore. Believe it or not, you used to be my all-time favorite truth seeker when you devoted your time exposing Bush and his cronies. You used to give me hope. Lately, you have lost your sense of objectivity. You are so biased against Hillary. What did she ever do to you? You have called her a liar, a bitch, evil, witch, and any other fantasy name you can think of. I don't think I've called her a bitch. People like you have made me come to the conclusion of not going to vote for Obama, even though I have voted as a Democrat all my voting life. What made you think Obama is better than Hillary? Do you really know Obama? Do you really know what he stands for? Many times he has been caught distorting the truth or shaping it to suit his agenda, and yet I've heard you yell or bash... I have not heard you yell or bash him out as much as you bash Hillary. For all you know, Obama might be worse than Hillary. So here is one more vote for McCain if Hillary loses. You asked a question tonight, how Hillary supporters feel about Governor of Pennsylvania Ed Rendell going to Fox News to give an interview and thank them for being fair to Hillary. If you want to know, I feel good about it. All caps. Lately, I've been watching Fox News because they seem to be the only news organization that are trying to be fair between Hillary and Obama. What kind of truth seeker are you when you can no longer be objective? Thanks, Rita, a disappointed listener. Well, Rita, if you're listening tonight, stick around. I'm coming back after the break. You'll hear me go after Barack Obama. Well, not me. Just once again, I'm just the messenger. There's very little on this program that is utterly and absolutely creative or original. But Chris Floyd, writing at someplace, comes on about Obama writes about Obama aligning his foreign policy if he's elected president with the whole clutch of evil, decadent Republicans and Democrats who've taken this country into more hell than most Americans can remember. But I get weak. I really do get weak. I guess I'm just tired from having a 3.5-year-old kid and sleeping about 4.5 hours a night for the past 3 years. But I do get tired. And people who are not tired, who are more objective, send me emails or send in phone calls or make phone calls to the program when I start to drift over to saying, well, you know, Obama is the savior of America, and they send me information and or opinion and or statements and stuff that makes me stop and think. And I have to admit, probably like a lot of Democrats, except the ones who are so insistent that if their candidate loses, Hillary or Barack, they're going to vote for McCain. That to me is sick and perverted. But so what? But probably like a lot of Democrats, you know, I've been flipping back and forth, trying once again to reconcile the fact that I have to choose between the lesser of two evils. And after reading what Chris Floyd wrote, once again, I'm in the neutral zone where I may sit this one out, or when I go into the voting booth, depending on who's on this corrupt, filthy, degenerate, dirty, filthy Georgia ballot, I may vote for a third-party candidate. I'll share that with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Man had an idea. He didn't like the way the cotton shirts that he wore absorbed, his bodily fluids when he exercised, so he came up with a better product. It was so wonderful to sit with dreamers.
Oh, Christ. Okay. David in Denver writes in, I was only going to listen for the first 10 minutes of your show, but since you started bashing Hillary, I decided to stick around for the entire show. Oh, boy, you people are just crazed. Senator Barack Obama said last Friday he would return to the more, quote, traditional, end quote, foreign policy efforts of past presidents such as George Herbert Walker Bush, John F. Kennedy, and Ronald Reagan. At a town hall event at a local high school gymnasium, Obama praised George Herbert Walker Bush for the way he handled the Persian Gulf War. With a large coalition and carefully defined objectives, Obama began a 6-day bus tour through Pennsylvania, the largest remaining primary prize in the contest with Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. Quote, the truth is that my foreign policy is actually a return to the traditional bipartisan realistic policy of George Bush's father, of John F. Kennedy, and in some ways, Ronald Reagan, end quote. That's from the Associated Press. As Chris Floyd points out, Obama is doing two things here. He's reaching out to two very different audiences. First, hoi polloi. That's you and me and average working stiff. He is simply pandering in the most shameless way imaginable, throwing out talismans like his for his TV-addled audience to comfort themselves with. Like, you like JFK? I'll be like him. You like Reagan? I'll be like him, too. You like the first George Bush? Hey, I'll be just like him as well. But beyond all the rubes out there, Obama is also signaling to the real masters of the United States, the military corporate complex, that he is a safe pair of hands, a competent technocrat who won't upset the imperial apple cart but will faithfully follow the 60-year post-war paradigm of leaving, quote, all options on the table, end quote, and doing, quote, whatever it takes, end quote, to keep the great game of geopolitical dominance going strong. He is saying quite clearly that he will practice foreign policy just as they did. And what did they do? They committed, instigated, abetted, and countenanced a relentless flood of crimes, murders, atrocities, deceptions, corruptions, mass destruction, and state terrorism. Obama is telling us, and the war profiteering powers that be, that he will give us what he calls realistic policies like those of John Kennedy. These include Kennedy's steady march into the quagmire of Vietnam and the backing of a deadly coup in Saigon to replace one brutal junta with another, greenlighting successful coups in Guyana, the Dominican Republic, and Iraq, where the CIA helped the Ba'ath Party come to power, greenlighting the spectacularly unsuccessful Bay of Pigs invasion, not to mention the terrorist operations and assassinations attempts there. As for his two foreign policy mentors, Reagan and Bush 1, the rap sheet is far too long for even a brief accounting here. We could begin, I suppose, with Reagan and Bush's act of treason in negotiating with Iranian hostage takers in 1980 to ensure that Tehran would not release the American captives at the U.S. Embassy before the November election. In return, Reagan and Bush pledged to provide cash and military hardware to the extremist mullahs, which they did. Or we could cite Reagan's ardent support for mass murdering militarist regimes in Central and South America, the arming and funding of the contra-insurgent army in Nicaragua, which received CIA training and terrorist tactics, or the Iran-Contra affair, which saw Reagan and Bush ship weapons to the extremist Iranian regime in return for cash, which they then gave to their contra-terrorist militia in flagrant violation of the law. Or Reagan's stupid and pointless invasion of Grenada, which he undertook solely to cover up the embarrassment of his stupid and pointless intervention in Lebanon, where 241 American Marines were killed after having been dropped into the middle of a multi-sided civil war. Or Reagan's vast expansion of a policy begun under Jimmy Carter of arming, funding, training, and organizing a global network of violent Islamic extremists, which you might see as a foreign policy masterstroke that is still paying dividends today. Obama offers no qualification at all to his championing of George Herbert Walker Bush, however. Indeed, his was the first name uttered in the paean to bipartisan foreign policy. But here, too, one quails at the prospect of toting up the high crimes and monstrous follies of this so-called traditional realist whom Obama promises to emulate. Should we start with Bush's arming and funding of Saddam Hussein long after he gassed his own people? Or Bush's latter perversion of the legal process to cover up his largesse to the dictator? Or Bush's pointless and unnecessary invasion of Panama, which killed thousands of innocent people and drove at least 20,000 people from their homes, all to remove a longtime U.S. intelligence asset, Manuel Noriega, who in the 70s received fat payments of bribes from the director of the CIA, one George Herbert Walker Bush. Yes, these are truly worthy examples of the kind of traditional, realistic, bipartisan foreign policy that we need more of. And my stars, isn't that Obama a breath of fresh air, promising to take us back to that golden age of yore? No one who openly embraces the foreign policy of Ronald Reagan and George Bush I, or John F. Kennedy for that matter, is going to change in any substantial way the militarist corporate machine that has already destroyed our democracy, gutted our Constitution, corrupted our system beyond all measure and probably beyond all repair, and killed and keeps on killing hundreds of thousands of innocent people decade after decade. Given this fact, every American voter must decide in his or her own conscience this question. Should I act to mitigate some small measure of the mass suffering wrought by this machine? Or does that action, that participation, merely legitimize the machine and strengthen it? That is the only question at issue in this election. For none of these prospective presidents offer any hope, audacious or otherwise, or any kind of root and branch reform of the imperial system, which will continue to grind on in its traditional, realistic, bipartisan way. Now, it's longer than that. Those are some of the highlights. But if you want to look at this, go to chris-floyd.com. Chris, C-H-R-I-S, dash Floyd, F-L-O-Y-D, .com. Chris-floyd.com. I did not realize that Senator Obama had said these comments at a town hall event at a local high school gymnasium, as reported by the Associated Press, that his foreign policy would be a return to the more traditional foreign policy of people like the first Bush, Kennedy, and Reagan. And you know, that one has to tear off the blinders. One really does. And I have to do this practically every day. And some days I get up and I don't tear them off. And as a result of not tearing them off, you know, I slip into the same garbage pit that I've spent the past 25 years trying to climb out of. And I never quite make it because I always, you know, when the election comes up, I always go into the booth and vote for the lesser of two evils. I have done this repeatedly. I've done it over and over and over and over again. And there's no way I can reconcile that except by telling myself, well, this time it'll be different. Well, this time. And the obvious fact, the fact that smashes its way into my face and my brain, is that it is never different. Never. I thought that Bill Clinton, back in 92, was going to be the proverbial breath of fresh air. And I voted for him. And like a crazy man, I voted for him again in 96. And I think that was after, maybe it was before or after, I don't know, his Secretary of State said that the slaughter of 500,000 Iraqi children was worth it in order to maintain some stupid-ass sanction imposed by the UN. And at the time, I can remember thinking, well, you know, the UN has tried on countless occasions to impose sanctions on Israel for its treatment of Palestinians, and it never works. The U.S. always vetoes those attempts, or somebody, usually the United States, will veto any attempt to sanction Israel. And yet here we are putting sanctions on a country that was already defeated and broken to the tune of 500,000 children's deaths. But, you know, so but so what? You know, what am I supposed to do? He's a Democrat. I've got to go with the Democrat. And I sit here night after night after night pointing out the obvious to myself and to anyone who cares to tune in that there is no difference in these two political parties. We'll be back after the break.
clean up after the second flush. And with your help, that is exactly what we're going to do. Thank you, and God bless you, and God bless America.
She scares me.
Lynn writes in, hi, Mike. I doubt very much Obama will do any of the bad things quoted in the article. The author does not understand what Obama is saying. The articles that you read are 99% good. I think this one is total crap. Please send an email to Obama and ask him to comment on that article. And she gives me the address. Before predicting what Obama will do by a third party, i.e. condemning him for things he may never do. No, Lynn, if you listened to what I read that Chris Floyd wrote, Obama has already done the whole point of the email is that Barack Obama has already said his foreign policy will be the same as or nearly as possible. He will emulate George Herbert Walker Bush, Ronald Reagan, and John Kennedy. And if you know, that's what he said. He didn't say I'm going to send 241 Marines to their deaths in Lebanon. He didn't say, I'm going to fund a terrorist operation in Central America that will slaughter upwards of 500,000 people. No, he didn't say that. He didn't say, I'm going to have assassinated the leader of South Vietnam, oddly, a few months before he himself was assassinated. Like Kennedy said, no. These are the events and the instances of terror and murder and mayhem that American presidents have caused. And for some reason, Barack Obama picked three of the most bloody and said, I'm going to emulate them. So he's, it's his words. These are not my words. These are not Chris Floyd's words. Chris Floyd stepped off from what Barack Obama said and said, okay, either Barack Obama is another goddamn liar or he's telling the truth. There is no halfway point here. The only possible halfway point would be that Barack Obama is a weasel who is saying things he does not mean so he can get elected. That's almost worse than being a liar. So, I don't know. I've got to choose one or the other. Either Barack Obama is a liar or he's telling the truth when he says he will emulate the foreign policy of these three presidents who are responsible for assassinations, death, destruction, global terror, murders, mayhem, governments overthrown, economies destabilized. Jesus! Either he's telling the truth or he is lying. Let's assume he's telling the truth, which is what Chris Floyd did. So, Lynn, if you need to vote for Obama, go ahead. I grant you, he's probably the lesser of two evils between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. But as some wag much hipper to this stuff than I has said many times, when you vote for the lesser of two evils, you're still voting for evil. So, do I get caught up in the rhetoric? Yes, I do. Because I see Barack Obama as unique. No critic of Barack Obama can deny that he is unique in American presidential politics. And like so many people, I'm starving to death. I'm dying of thirst for leadership. I don't care who the person is if they could provide leadership. And when I see my choices fall by the wayside, like Kucinich, I'm still hungry and thirsty. And I'm still, in so many respects, like most good citizens of any good nation state, I can be an ardent follower, not jingoistic, not to the point where, I would lead, stand by while 6 million Jews go to the death camps. No. But when it comes to wanting to be led by an honest person, wanting to see my country do the best it can, I am the perfect follower. When my country is being led by madmen and psychopaths, no. I will do everything I can to resist up to leading an armed revolution. That I will not do because I understand what happens to the leaders of armed revolutions, at least in this state, small s, that we're in now, this condition we're in now. Like a lot of human beings in this country, I have an essential component of cowardice. And I say essential, by that I mean at my essence, there is an element of cowardice. Do you not have it? So this is, you know, it's very difficult. I would like a leader. I would like to have someone that I could vote for where it's not the lesser of two evils, where it's someone who can win and can win on the basis, and win is not the right word, but can win on the basis of the fact that he or she would provide solid, respectful, democratic, honorable, ethical, moral leadership. Now, the sad fact is, that's probably, that day has come and gone. And there's nothing I can do with my little touch on the touch screen here in Georgia to alter that. There really isn't. That's not a giving up. That's not a throwing in the sponge. It's not a cop out. There are other ways to affect change. So, I'm not accusing Barack Obama of wanting to fund something as hideous as the Iraq or the Nicaraguan Contras. I'm just saying that he claims that he will follow the man's foreign policy who set that into effect. And again, either Barack Obama is telling the truth or he is a liar. There's, I don't think, any halfway ground. Welcome back. Seven past the hour. A couple of emails here. This is from TP. TP? Come on, Mike. You know he has to say that. I'm no Obama fan, but you know he has to say those things, Mike. This is politics. We all know about the crimes, and he knows about them too, but no one will ever be president saying up front, he's going to align us with the communists. Because of the filibuster, no one can change anything anyway. You know that, Mike. Okay, but what's your point in this email? If no one can change anything anyway, why get involved in this process, right? James writes in, who would you like your next president to emulate? They have all been murderers and imperialist thugs. Should Senator Obama have said he will not emulate any previous administration and will create a sui generis foreign policy based on the teachings of Gandhi, Enoch the Prophet, or Captain Kangaroo? I don't know. This country will never be led by a so-called honest person. We can only hope for incremental levels of honesty, unless you are suggesting an armed insurrection or coup. If so, that would achieve what you and I would like to see. Otherwise, we are where we are, period. Well, I'm not necessarily saying armed insurrection. The one thing about a corrupt system, eventually, in any any place in history. Corruption eventually brings down the regime, the empire, the army, the whatever it is that's maintaining control. Eventually, unless it is an honorable institution, and I grant you, there have been periods of time when there have been honorable forms of governance. While they may appear to us from a couple thousand years distance as having been dictatorial or not granting the sort of freedom that we have come to define as freedom, the sort of action we've come to define as freedom, they were still honorable or moral. Well, morality changes, doesn't it? Ethical? I guess that changes. Ah, screw it. What I think I'm saying is, no, I'm not advocating armed insurrection. I'm looking for, and for those of you who are writing me saying, well, you know, when I talk about I'll look for someone to follow, you claim to be your own leaders. Come on, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a political leader. I am not my own political leader. I simply do not exist in a vacuum. Neither do you. Nobody exists in a vacuum. If you think that you know, that sounds like a very Republican or a very conservative point of view. You know, I am my own higher power. Well, okay, maybe in a philosophical sense, but damn sure not in an economic sense. No, you're not. No, you're not. You can be the most creative person on the world and invent a widget that just produces miracles. If nobody buys it or nobody pays any attention to it, you're screwed. You're nobody. So, no, you don't exist in a vacuum. You are not your own political power. You are not your own leader. No, you're not. You may make your own decisions. That's different. That's different from what I'm talking about. If you don't get the difference, then, okay, fair enough. From Barry in warm, balmy New Hampshire, Mike, I agree that Obama is going to be probably, at best, Bill Clinton light. I don't support him or Hillary, but short of taking up a weapon in active opposition, or moving the hell out of the United States, which really won't make a difference for the planet, there's not much sense in wasting my vote here in New Hampshire. You have the relative luxury of knowing that your vote and Kathy's vote in Georgia likely will not change anything in the final electoral tally. I don't have the luxury. Yes, Obama and Clinton may be little improvement. I don't like either of them. But I will vote for the Democratic nominee in this swing state. This Tracy Crane, Q. Ozzy Osbourne, that is hurtling toward the abyss of hell we're all riding on, that everyone on this planet is riding on, doesn't need to have the brake lines cut by McCain. Whatever chance we have left will be destroyed by McCain. To me, it's simply that clear. And one more thing. Staying home is not the answer on Election Day for anyone. We need progressives in Congress. Barry, in warm, balmy New Hampshire. By staying home, no, I don't mean I am not going to vote. There are a lot of candidates down ticket that, wait a minute, that's right, I live in Georgia. God. There is nothing down ticket here. Everything is Republican. And the two Democrats that we have in our congressional delegation, I think it's two, maybe it's three, are in absolutely safe Democratic seats anyway. Moving along, we didn't talk about it on this program because the story was just too grim, but you've heard it, I'm sure, the story about Walmart, the Walmart employee, Deborah Shank, who was in a car crash 7 years ago that left her brain damaged, left her in a wheelchair, unable to form short-term memory, you know, just an absolute mess. She sued, and the insurance company that she sued and got a settlement. And then Walmart, who was her employer, filed a claim against her for almost $500,000, money that the family desperately needs to cover her medical expenses. Walmart sued her for the cost of her medical treatment plus interest and legal fees, saying that, they needed the money. Walmart did to go back into their fund to cover other employees. Now this is, you know, this is that vile, filthy dunghole of a organization that Kathy and I just refused to go into. I think the only time you and I have been in a Walmart was in Mexico. That's the only time, because it was the only place we could go to find peroxide, because I had, what had I done? I'd stepped on, I had a cut. I cut myself on a bayonet or something. But that's the only time I've ever gone into a Walmart in the past 15 years was in Mexico. But anyway, the story got out, what Walmart was doing. And there's a lot of pressure applied. And Jim Shank, the I think he was a former husband because he had to divorce her so that her Medicaid payments would go up a bit. But he's listed here as her husband. Anyway, Jim Shank issued the following statement after receiving a letter from Walmart today stating that the company intends to drop its claim for $470,000 from him and his wife. That's money, of course, they desperately need to cover her medical expenses. Shank said in a statement, quote, "I'm grateful that Walmart has seen their error and decided to rectify it. I just wish it hadn't taken them so long. This never should have happened. I sincerely hope no other family ever has to go through this." He says, this is a statement, "My thanks go first and foremost to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, for the strength to bear up under all this. Thanks also to the citizens of the United States. It wasn't me who made this happen. It was the outcry of the people. And if there's a lesson in this story, it's that we the people still mean something," end quote. And I think I heard on Oberman's program tonight that this family still has about $270,000 left to take care of whatever subsequent medical expenses this woman will have to deal with. We have a couple of things here about Attorney General Michael Mukasey and a statement that he made that I guess history will have to pick it up because it doesn't mean anything now. If it meant anything, what Mukasey said, if it had any meaning whatsoever, then impeachment hearings would begin. Oh, God, I can't. If it meant anything whatsoever, the American people would turn on this regime that's in Washington now. By the millions, we would be in the streets tomorrow. And by Thursday, we would be have the White House surrounded. But what Mukasey said bears repeating, if for no other reason, just to so we can let each other know what he said. We'll share that with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy. Don't
you dare to try to stop us. It's about 21 past the hour. Attorney General Michael Mukasey. Now remember, this is the thug that Senator Schumer, the Democrat, introduced as the successor to this freakish Gonzalez. But anyway, mainstream media missed this one completely. The bloggers caught it when Mukasey delivered a speech last week demanding that Congress grant the psychopath in the White House the warrantless wire or eavesdropping powers and telecom immunity. During the question and answer session afterwards, there was one extraordinary but very little noticed claim that Mukasey made. He argued that officials, quote, shouldn't need a warrant when somebody with a phone in Iraq picks up a phone and calls somebody in the United States, because that's the call that we may really want to know about. And before 9/11, that's the call that we didn't know about. We knew that there has been a call from some place that was known to be a safe house in Afghanistan, and we knew that it came to the United States. We didn't know precisely where it went. What? If what this freak said is true, and as Glenn Greenwald points out, that's a pretty big if. But if it's true, what McCasey said, his revelation about this Afghan call that the Bush crime family knew about but didn't intercept amounts to one of the most potent indictments yet of the Bush administration's failure to detect the plot before it occurred. Now, contrary to McCasey's false claim, FISA did not prevent eavesdropping on that call. After September 11th, it was revealed that the CIA and the FBI had intercepted a variety of messages, including phrases such as, quote, there is a big thing coming, quote, they're going to pay the price, quote, we're ready to go. None of these messages gave specific details, and none reached intelligence analysts until after the destruction of the World Trade Center. Now, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, quote, McCasey did not specify the call to which he referred. Chronicle picked it up, obviously. He also did not explain why the government, if it knew of telephone calls from suspected foreign terrorists, why the government hadn't sought a wiretapping warrant from a court established by Congress to authorize this, or hadn't monitored all such calls without a warrant for 72 hours as allowed by law. The hideous reality here, end of quote from the Chronicle, the hideous reality here is that the use of the FISA law in its changed form, which is what these sons of bitches want, the end of the FISA law and the establishment of something new, total unrestrained access to every bit of personal information about every single American citizen. What those changes really, why they're desperately wanted, is because in order to affect that kind of surveillance, you need the cooperation of corporate America. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. How could it? Corporate America has, at least in the telecom industry and other industries that you and I just don't know that much about yet, but corporate America in the form of the telecom industry has said, oh, sure, well, you know, we'll do it. And then we found out about it because the New York Times published an article about it after sitting on the article for a year. And it's my understanding that there are upwards of 40 lawsuits now against the telecoms for doing this, an absolute, complete, total violation of the law. They are guilty. And these are felonies. So what's at play here has nothing whatsoever to do with the security of the United States and everything to do with granting even more sovereignty to corporate America. Yes, sovereignty. The sovereign can do anything he wants to do. And if the serfs don't like it, I don't know, they can go murder an ox or something. But, you know, that's just the way it goes. But the realization here, to me, that McCasey points out that this corrupt Bush crime family had the information repeatedly, and did nothing. And the doing nothing, in my opinion, was a deliberate act. Now, this may be as far as it goes where it concerns 9/11 and the truth. I know a lot of people believe that the government engineered this. That still may be true. I've said before, I don't know. But even if it only goes this far, that after repeated warnings, repeated intelligence, blatant, straightforward, clear sentences, nothing left to the imagination. Nothing left to the imagination. There is a big thing coming. They're going to pay the price. We're ready to go. Bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S. All of that was disregarded for a very simple reason, because as the Project for New American Century made very clear, this country needed another so-called Pearl Harbor so that the Constitution and everything tangential to the Constitution could be destroyed and the Bush crime family could get the power it so richly needs. Take away your freedom, lock and load, beat and search. Oil, blood, money, make these killers ride cold. Suspicious suicide, people dying, never told. It's all a part of playing God, so you think we need them. While being Ashcroft, take away.
I don't know where he is. Nor, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him. I truly am not that concerned about him.
Yeah, why bother? There's no reason to be upset about Bin Laden. You had plenty of advance notice, right? General Hayden, the other part of this dynamic duel, Michael Mukasey on the one hand, Attorney General and the CIA Director General Michael Hayden. Does this guy go to work in his general's uniform? What does this mean? Our military correspondent, Sharon, says, does he wear the uniform on a daily basis when he's at CIA headquarters, or does he wear the uniform with the four shiny stars only when he testifies to Congress or makes public statements? Since he's on active duty, does that mean that the Air Force is running the CIA or might have undue influence over the CIA? A military officer can't serve as Secretary of Defense until he's been out of uniform for 10 years without special permission from Congress. Maybe we need a similar rule for the CIA. Mike Hayden is, I don't know, he's another weirdo. He said on Sunday that he believes Iran is still pursuing a nuclear bomb, even though the U.S. intelligence community, including his own agency, reached a consensus judgment last year that Iran had halted its nuclear weapons work in 2003. He was on NBC's Meet the Press, and he was asked by media whore number one Tim Russert whether Hayden thought Iran was trying to develop a nuclear weapon. Hayden said yes, adding that his assessment was not based on, get this, court of law stuff. It's not based on court of law stuff. What does that mean, General? He went on to say, this is Mike Hayden looking at the body of evidence. But I thought 13 U.S. intelligence agencies looked at the body of evidence and came to a conclusion that is 180 degrees opposite from this freak's. He said his conviction that Iran is still working to develop a nuclear bomb stemmed largely from Iran's willingness to endure international sanctions rather than comply with demands for nuclear inspection. But I thought the IAEA was in there, General Hayden. Am I wrong about that? Do you know, Kathy? Am I wrong? I thought the IAEA made periodic inspections of Iran's nuclear program. He goes on to say, quote, why would the Iranians be willing to pay the international tariff they appear willing to pay for what they're doing now if they did not have, at a minimum, the desire to keep the option open to develop a nuclear weapon, and perhaps even more so that they've already decided to do that? Well, I would throw the Israel question back at General Hayden. The Israelis refuse to allow anybody, plus they are not signatories to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, and Iran is. The Israelis will not allow anyone to inspect their nuclear facilities. But that just doesn't get talked about. Now, should Israel? I don't know. Should Iran? I don't know. But it's not a casus belli. It's not a reason to go to war because the Iranians say, hey, wait a goddamn minute. This is our country. Check your own nuclear weapons. Does China have a nuclear weapons program? Yeah. Who's the bigger threat? Oh, don't even go there, Molloy. Don't even go there. Remember, the assessment from the intelligence community issued last December concluded that Iran has suspended its nuclear weapons work in 2003 and appeared not to have restarted it. And, of course, Mukasey now makes himself the latest Bush senior administration official to question the findings of his own agency and the rest of the intelligence agencies that participated in producing this NIE, this National Intelligence Estimate. What does that mean, Director Hayden? Does that mean, did I say Mukasey again? Does that mean, Director Hayden, that your own agency is lying to you?
They don't have weapons!
To and for what purpose? Because the CIA, General Hayden, is chock-a-block with people who want to destroy America by feeding false information to you, you freak, so that your guard comes down and all the bombs will start flying. You know, these people are insane. They're just totally and completely insane. Now, this of course, is in keeping what Bush said a couple of weeks ago. He said Iran was dangerous, Iran is dangerous, and Iran will be dangerous if they have the knowledge necessary to make a nuclear weapon. That was at a December 4th news conference. I can get the information to make a nuclear weapon, George. Just about anybody who has internet access can do that. So, you know, once again, you display your freakishness by making a statement like that. And how long? It was a week ago that the cyborg Dick Cheney alleged that Iran was, quote, heavily involved in trying to develop nuclear weapons enrichment. Heavily involved. This is the same rat bastard who jumped on board and said, well, you know, they've got nuclear weapons. Well, they're going to be a mushroom cloud and, you know, we have to invade Iraq. See, this is what one of my emailers said earlier tonight, that Hillary is only trying to be a neocon. She will tell a lie and then back down. These rat bastards tell lies and stick to them. They stick to them as though they are in catechism class, because most of these people happen to be Catholics. I'm just saying. But it's like the priest is drilling a catechism into them, and there is no deviation. There is no way to change anything. Or you'll just get extra time in hell, and all the praying and candle burning is not going to get your ass out until the good Lord decides, all right, he's chastised, get him out. Is that what these people believe? That once you start the lie, keep going. Don't ever back down. This is the Bush policy. Tell as many lies as you want. Just don't. Even when the proof is overwhelming that you've told a lie. Keep telling the lie. Like the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq is a classic example. So General Hayden and Attorney General Mukasey, two more thugs who hate America and want to see us all dead. Oh, no. Do we have one of those? All right. Joe is calling from Las Vegas. Joe, welcome to the program. Hello, Joe.
Hello. You there?
Yeah. No, I'm here.
Okay. How you doing?
Fine. But go ahead. Get to what you want to say.
I've been listening to you for a little while, and all I hear is how wiretaps are illegal and
are they?
Things of that nature. I don't know.
You don't know? You're an American citizen and you don't know?
What? Can you tell me what statute that is?
No. Yeah, of course I can. Of course I can. The FISA Act that was put into play after it was discovered that another Republican bastard, Dick Nixon, had ordered his secret agencies to wiretap Americans back in the 70s. You
right.
don't know this?
But I believe...
You don't know this?
I do, but why? I don't understand why you believe that Bush is the bad guy when the terrorists are the ones killing the Americans.
What terrorists? Wait a minute. Now, don't go away. Don't get your ass in front of your mouth. Don't go away, because this is very intriguing. What?
I'm not going anywhere.
What? All right, what?
You guys were the ones...
Wait a minute. Joe, stop. Now, don't. Joe, put him on hold. Don't make the fatal mistake of trying to overtalk me. Every time one of you right-wingers call in, you do this, and I wind up dumping you. I'm willing to keep you on, but you will conduct yourself in a courteous manner. Okay? Can we have that understanding? All right? Joe?
I'm here. I'm not talking.
Okay. I want you to conduct yourself the way your mama taught you to conduct yourself around responsible adults. That's all I'm asking you to do. Now, what terrorists are killing Americans? Tell me.
What's that? The terrorists on 9/11, the terrorists that are in Iraq killing our men and women.
All right, now the terrorists at 9/11 are all dead. Are you aware of that?
Okay.
Wait. They're all dead. They're all dead.
Sir, are you going to allow me to talk?
No.
Or am I one
Joe,
under you?
Joe, for God's sake, said the terrorists are killing us. You said the terrorists are killing us. I asked you what terrorists.
Which are part of the 9/11, the 9/11 who is Al-Qaeda, who was the Taliban.
Was that bin Laden?
It was bin Laden. It was bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, everyone involved
okay,
in Al-Qaeda.
Okay, why are we not going after him. Get rid of him. Jesus Christ. I can't do it. I just can't do it. These mush-mouthed jackasses that call in here with this kind of nonsense. The terrorists that killed Americans, you're talking about the 19 Saudis, or the 19 bombers, 15 of whom came from Saudi Arabia. Are you talking about those terrorists? Are you talking about the terrorists organized by bin Laden, who has been in Afghanistan or Pakistan, like, forever, since we funded him and put him in business back in the late 70s against the Russians? Are you talking about him? Okay? Are you talking about, what are you talking about? If you were talking about them, then why are we in Iraq? What did Iraq do? What did Saddam Hussein do on 9/11 to attack the United States? What did anybody in Iraq do? You see, like most right-wingers, you are out of your goddamn mind. You have no sense of anything. You don't know what's happening. Please stay away from me. You make me nervous.
Jackets and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me. I don't see things their way. Yeah, I'm on the right side.
Guarding the civil liberties by monitoring the program on a regular basis, by having the folks at NASA, the legal team, as well as the Inspector General monitor the program, and we're briefing Congress.
Well, then you have all the bases covered, don't you, chuckle nuts? But my half-witted caller from Las Vegas doesn't even know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're talking about, George. But the caller doesn't know either. How can Americans be as stupid as the guy from Las Vegas? And I'm, you know, it's not an ad hominem attack. He displays his own stupidity.
What always I find interesting about these callers every time they call, this type of caller, they'll call up with something, some topic. Well, name a statute that Bush has violated. Name some crime. He said, well, he's violated FISA. And him, what about the terrorists? The terrorists, Mike. Don't you care about the terrorists? The terrorists are out there, Mike. I mean, they have nothing else after that. Once you've shot down rationally and logically any argument they have about, well, they haven't committed any crime. Well, yes, they have. Well, there's terrorists.
Yeah. Of course
they have to commit crimes.
It's a loser's game. I figured out 10 years ago there's no point ever, although I keep trying. It's just like I keep voting for Democrats, hoping that they are going to, turn around this imperialist murdering craziness that we have gotten involved in this country for the past 40 years. By the same token, I continue to put right-wingers on the phone or on the program, desperately hope. We'll put them on hold temporarily and say, now listen, you know, be polite, act like your mother told you to act around adults. Don't get creepy and freaky. You can say something, I'll say, well, you gonna let me talk? you know, can you imagine if somebody walked into that guy's gas station or wherever the hell he works and started acting like that to him? You know, it's insane. But this is the way right-wingers are. You know, when I talk about neo-Nazis, incipient Nazis, there you go. The proof, they always prove the absolute worst definition of conservatives, that they're jackasses, every single one. Now, maybe it's a self-selecting audience that calls this program. I don't know. But I cannot name you one single conservative or Bush sucker or right-winger who has called me on a radio program over the past 10 years who could, A, put together a coherent, logical point of view, B, respond to the challenges that I make to that coherent, logical point of view, which never materializes to begin with, and who, C, eventually decides, well, I'm just going to start screaming at Malloy because I know he'll cut me off and that'll be my saving grace. And I could say, see, that son of a bitch cut me off. I don't know what's wrong with you people. I really don't. Is it a virus? What is it? Are all of you this freaked, just completely unable to conduct a conversation? Is this what listening to Limbaugh and Hannity has done to you people? Turned your brain into brown muck? Keep your heads straight ahead, because if you lay down on a pillow at night, all that crap's going to leak out and stain your pillowcase. What is wrong with you people? I don't get it. Believe what you want to believe. Do what you want to do, for Christ's sake. It's America. But when you display a kind of ignorance that you don't even know what the, like, the number one topic has been in front of Congress for so many months, and that's the fact that the Bush crime family is destroying the Constitution, that the Bush crime family is trying to allow corporate America to trample on the Constitution, that the FISA Act has been repeatedly violated, impeachable offenses by this corrupt regime, and you don't even know what the hell I'm talking about? To the extent that you come back, what about the terrorists? Just like Kathy says. You people are hopeless. I just want to say to Ian, who screens your calls, don't put these rat bastards on again. I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of hearing their inability to be rational or to be an American. I'm just sick of it. But I don't say that to him because I keep hoping. Just like I keep hoping Nancy Pelosi is going to say impeachment is on the table. I keep hoping that someday, in the hazy, murky future, I will get a caller who is a right-winger, who is a conservative, who can carry on a conversation and defend his position against an overwhelming avalanche of facts that will come from me, that he will still be able to defend himself and talk like an adult, not like a five-year-old on a kindergarten playground. And that shows you how screwed up I am. John, is it John calling from Winnipeg, Manitoba? Is it John? Is that how you pronounce it?
It's Jan.
Jan. Hey, Jan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. One thing I've been hoping to hear somebody finally call in about is these NAFTA. We're going to force the renegotiation of NAFTA. Either that or we'll cancel it.
Right.
Hey, just come and talk. Be glad to talk to you. We want to get you out of our oil patch. For every 10 gallons of oil we pump out of the ground, by NAFTA, we got to give you 7. We can't get a decent conflict resolution program going.
Well, now, wait, what do you mean? You have to give the United States 7 out of every 10 gallons or barrels of oil you pump?
That's right.
Why is that?
Under proportional use of resources.
Well, you got me there. I'm totally ignorant of what you're talking about.
Well, it's there. You can look up just about any Canadian newspaper.
So the United States essentially owns all Canadian or 70% of Canadian oil.
That's the deal. We can't get a conflict resolution thing going, like over softwood lumber and grain.
Right.
For the softwood agreement that we got, it took a $1 billion bribe to the White House to get that one even partially settled.
So then you would be, like most American workers would be, all in favor of trashing NAFTA.
No.
Well, I mean, I am. I'm totally in favor of getting rid of it. Hey, hold on a second. Let me put you on hold, Jan. We'll come back after the break and finish the conversation. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon you now.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Nova M Radio is what you're listening to. My name is Mike Malloy. Let's go right back to Jan, who has called in from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. All right.
I'm still here.
Good. And appreciate you holding on. No, I am not familiar with any of the rules, restrictions, and obligations under NAFTA. Jan, so what you're saying is 70% of the oil pumped in Manitoba or all?
No, in Canada.
In Canada.
Our oil fields are mostly Western Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically Alberta and Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we have the oil sands and all that going now.
Right.
And, well... 20 years ago, I guess, it started the great big rush of American companies buying up Canadian oil exploration,
mm-hmm.
and they started playing the games. But NAFTA itself started out as a good deal for everybody, and it still can be if we can, like the Mexicans, they're being raped over NAFTA. Their agriculture is just collapsing totally,
mm-hmm.
because of being flooded by American goods.
That are subsidized by the government.
Yeah, American goods are subsidized. That
right.
was part of the big deal with the grain flow between Canada and the U.S. U.S. farmers were collecting a $15 a ton subsidy on all grain exported from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that screamed like hell when Canadian farmers, or the Canadian grain boards, started selling into the United States without subsidy.
How is the oil arrangement affect the prices of oil products in Canada,
we
like
can't
gas?
We sell our oil to ourselves for less than the international price that the U.S. pays elsewhere. And... of course, with the American dollar going right into the tank,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's lost 40%.
Right.
That's why the oil prices are so high, because nobody wants to sell for less than they were getting 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, that
and of course, you're suffering under that one big time.
It's my understanding it's not just the declining value of the dollar, but also the speculators who are bidding up the price of oil. Where is it now? $104, $107 a barrel.
Yeah, I haven't caught it online today.
All right, let me get a bottom line here.
The American speculators making the big bucks, and guess who's taking it? Bend over a little further, Mike.
I hear you. Let me get a conclusion from you here, Jan. What would you, as a Canadian, like to see happen with NAFTA? See if you can give it to me in a couple sentences, real quick.
Very simple. Conflict resolution that sticks, where your trading partners are being constantly forced to bend over. We're fed up of being in bed with an elephant and having to run like hell every time it moves.
Mm. All right. Well, Jan, thank you. I appreciate the fact that you listened to the program, much less call in, and I hope you'll call in again, okay?
Well, I've been calling you for, 3 years now. Not very often, but I listen all the time.
Do you ever get through when you call?
Four times now in the last 2.5 years.
Oh, okay. Well, my bad for not remembering Jan. All right. Well, thanks, Jan. I appreciate it. Take care.
You take care, too. Bye-bye.
All right. So we have their oil. Couple of emails here real quick regarding the inspectors that go into Iran. Total contradiction of Hayden and Bush and Cheney and the rest of these warmongering bastards. Prairie 2 writes, not only do the international inspectors go into Iran anywhere they want on a regular basis, they have complained about the U.S. intelligence leads, quote, they are given all the time. And not one has ever led them to any violation. Iran is being sanctioned for something they have every right to do under the treaty they signed. Bush wants them to buy their nuclear fuel He wants them to buy their nuclear fuel, even though they are owed $100 million worth of fuel by the European consortium that supplies the reactors there. The Iranians are somewhat skeptical about having... The Iranians are somewhat skeptical about paying for more fuel when they aren't getting what they already paid for. Gotcha. Now, it's only been, how many months has it been since Halliburton folded their tent and moved out of Iran? The whole thing sucks, trust me. Oh, one other thing that CIA Director and Air Force General Michael Hayden said on Sunday on, was it on NBC's Meet the Press with media whore number one Tim Russert. He said that Al-Qaeda is training fighters now who look Western, And these fighters, these terrorists, could easily cross U.S. borders without attracting attention. Hayden said they are bringing operatives into that region, Pakistan, for training. Operatives that wouldn't attract your attention if they were going through the customs line at Dulles International Airport with you when you were coming back from overseas. They're white. They look Western. And would be able to come into this country without attracting the kinds of attention that others might, Hayden said without offering further details. Oh, you mean the brown ones? I see. The white ones are going to get by because they don't attract attention. And obviously, General, anyone who's not white would attract attention. I get it. Okay. I remember back in the 50s when it wasn't terrorists, it was the commies. Remember the commies? They were under our beds. They were in our State Department. They were in our military. My caller from Las Vegas, the poor, misinformed right-winger, is too young, I would imagine, to have remembered and too stupid to have done any research to find out about the Army-McCarthy hearings. This is when Wisconsin Republican Senator Joe McCarthy insisted that the highest ranks of the United States Army was infiltrated with communists. And, I mean, it just went on and on and on and on. Back then, it was communists. 50 years later, it's terrorists. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. Now, nobody ever suggested that white communists back in the day would get past inspections. We had Jewish communists, and those we executed, like the Rosenbergs. Whether they were guilty or not, they were executed because they, you know, sold our nuclear secrets to the Ruskies, or not sold them, but gave them. But apparently what Hayden is saying now is that Al-Qaeda is smartening up, and they know that if they send brown people or swarthy people over here, or people who wear turbans, or any kind of, you know, that kind of dress like Barack Obama dressed up in Somalia, that we would spot them right away and yank them out of the line for tickets to get on board an airplane. And as a result of that, Al-Qaeda is getting smart. They're going to recruit from, oh, I don't know, Norway or perhaps Lapland. Does Lapland still exist? I don't know. Has it been absorbed? Oh, well. Maybe a Lap or a Norwegian, and recruit them, a Norwegian Muslim terrorist, and send him or her, well, him, through the security line at Dulles International Airport or Kennedy, loaded and packed up with nuclear bombs. Jesus Christ. I don't know. It just makes me crazy. It just makes me crazy. All right. When we come back, we have the sound for you. I want you to hear Representative Jay Inslee, Democrat of Washington, and Ed Markey, Democrat of Massachusetts, talking with the capitalist roaders who run the oil companies and how they're not making enough money. Their $140 billion combined profit last year was not enough to let them turn loose of the 60 or $18 billion they get in tax breaks. That's what you and I give them.
But when the Lord gets ready, you gotta move.
bottom.
Finishing the fight,
yeah.
Rocky and I have a lot in common. I never quit, I never get up, and I know that we're going to make it together, not just up those stairs, but we're going to climb that mountain to a better day for America.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I would like you to hear this. This is from today's Committee on Energy Independence hearing in the U.S. House. I guess it was the Energy and Commerce Committee. I'm not sure which committee it is. But this is a hearing on oil company profits and subsidies, an industry that runs America and certainly has for the past 7 years totally has influenced our foreign policy and domestic policy, got us into a war. I know a lot of people want to blame the Israelis for the attack on Iraq, but if you really think about it, maybe the Israelis are not all that involved. Don't send me emails! More like big oil. But anyway, here sat today executives from the leading U.S. oil companies whose combined profits last year were $140 billion. Which is just, I mean, it's just, how much is enough money for these predatory vampire bastards? How much is enough? You and I are paying what we're paying for gasoline and home heating oil and so on and so forth. And an argument can be made that if the U.S. hadn't gotten oil subsidies from the government going back about 60 or 70 years, if we were paying what the rest of the world pays, a lot of things would be different in this country. We would have more energy-efficient cars. We would not be in the Middle East. Global warming would not be to the level that it's at right now. On and on and on. But there's no point in making those cases now because the deed is done. So here is Representative Jay Inslee from his opening remarks about how big oil companies deserve to win awards for taxpayer abuses.
In state, Mr. Inslee.
Thank you. Just as I was walking in this room, I had a fellow from Virginia, told him where I was headed into, and he said, Congressman, I own stock in one of those companies, but give them hell anyway. And I thought it was kind of indicative of what you know is the public sentiment out across the country. But I think that public sentiment is not because Americans don't understand the laws of supply and demand, and we know that demand's going up with China and India, and supply is somewhat limited. It's because of these two great abuses that they feel are going on and that create this great anger besides just the price rise. And that is, first, they cannot understand when they're paying $3.28 or $3.44 out in my state of Washington at the pump, why then you then reach into their pits and take out another $18 billion on April 15th out of the tax bill. They can't understand that. And when they ask you to give you H, I think that's one of the reasons. Because Americans believe, and I think rightfully so, that if you were going to give awards for taxpayer abuses, this would win the Heisman and the Oscar and the Nobel Prize. To reach into Americans' pockets at tax time to take this when these prices are going up like this. And secondly, Americans are concerned that even though we know we have to wean ourselves off of oil and gas, that global warming demands this, even though Americans know that we're the most innovative people in the face of the earth, we're still seeing a very, very small as a percentage of your revenues investment in the clean energy technologies that Americans know that we can perfect to really create a clean energy revolution in this country.
And you know what the miserable son of a bitch who was being questioned had to say, one of them, after this opening statement from Representative Inslee? That the diversion of these $18 billion that big oil gets in tax subsidies, if that were taken away from them and diverted into research for alternate fuels, that there would be, or alternate energy sources, there would be this horrendous collapse of the oil industry. Prices would shoot upward, and any advantages gained from alternative sources of energy would be offset by the fact that oil-based energy products would skyrocket. And this mealy-mouthed Congress committee sits there. I don't know how many Republicans were there today. Probably none. Most of these Republican swine have been staying away from these kinds of hearings called by Democrats because the Republican swine know that a lot of the reelection depends on kowtowing to the big oil swine. It's pigs doing pigs. So they don't want to get caught in the crossfire between the totally ineffective Democratic questioners and the highly effective big oil executives who sat there today and more or less told Congress to go have sex with itself, only not necessarily in those terms. And like I said at the beginning of the program tonight, Kathy and I listened to some or watched some of this today on television, and it was just I'm dumbstruck to see the body language of these corporate executives. At least when the tobacco executive sat there a few years back and said that no, we don't believe nicotine is addictive, you could see them squirming because they knew they were lying. These guys today didn't squirm. They just more or less answered the questions with a cavalier attitude of, get out of my face, bastard. By the way, what is your name? We will make sure that you are replaced in the next Congress. And they can. And they will.
Are going up because the demand for oil outstrips the supply for oil. Oil's going up because we use too much oil. That's why the price of oil's going up.
Well, I've always been grateful that we have such a mental giant as George W. Bush to explain things to us in such simple, succinct terms. Back to today's hearing. The witnesses were representatives of Big Oil. And, of course, all this occurred on April Fool's Day. The committee chairman, Representative Ed Markey, a Democrat of Massachusetts, I think even makes a reference here to how Big Oil is making fools of the American people and how the Bush administration's lousy pro-corporate energy policies are bankrupting Americans. This is a very interesting statement, but so what? Ed Markey followed up with the revelation, took another 2 minutes to explain to us that water is wet. Now, what proposals are going to come out of these hearings? 3, 2, 1. Nothing. That's absolutely right. But let's listen just for the entertainment value. Here's Ed Markey.
Yesterday, Americans saw that the price of gasoline hit a record high price. Today, on April Fool's Day, consumers all over America are hoping that the top executives from the five largest oil companies will tell us that these soaring gas prices are just part of some elaborate hoax. Unfortunately, it is not a joke. For nearly 8 years, this administration's energy policy has been in the tank.
Oh.
The price of gasoline has nearly tripled from $1.11 a gallon in 2002. To yesterday's all-time high when it hit yet another record of $3.29 a gallon.
Yay!
Each week, American consumers go to the gas pump and pay the price for this administration's failed energy policy.
Well, no.
20% of all households in America make less than $20,000 a year. With gas prices at $3.29 a gallon, the poorest 20% of American households are spending nearly 10% of their income just on gasoline. American consumers also know that the major oil companies are reaping a major financial windfall. Big Oil's profits have more than quadrupled over the last 6 years.
Uh-huh.
Just last year alone, ExxonMobil recorded more than $40 billion in profit, the greatest corporate profit in history. And the five companies sitting before us today netted a combined $123 billion in profit in 2007. Last year, the five largest oil companies spent more than $50 billion on schemes to prop up the price of stock. And as they rake in the profits at a record clip, the major oil companies, supported by the Bush administration, are opposing legislation that would take $18 billion in tax breaks they currently receive and redirect it to renewable fuels and clean energy. In April of 2005, President Bush said, quote, with $55 a barrel oil,
yeah,
we don't need incentives for oil and gas companies to explore. And that was true in 2005.
Yeah, he
but
said
the
that?
The price of oil now doubled,
uh-huh,
and our planet's thermometer rising. This administration must end its opposition to the renewable energy incentive package that the House passed last month. So on April Fool's Day, the biggest joke of all is being played on American families by Big Oil by using every trick in the book to keep billions in federal tax subsidies, even as they rake in record profits.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I almost went to sleep there. Okay, Ed, that was a great statement. Of course, you leave out the preamble to all that, and that is the fact that Americans historically have paid less than half of what the rest of the world pays for gasoline at the pump, and as a result, we have become energy hogs. Hogs. Grunting, rooting hogs, Ed. We contribute, we absorb 25% of the world's available energy resources, I believe, and we constitute, 6% of the world's population, or something like that. So, considering the preamble, Representative Markey, that we are energy gluttons, hogs, pigs, you know, just eat, gimme. If you consider that, and the rest of the world has kind of patiently just sat back and watched this while they pay and have paid for a number of years $4, $5, $6, $7 a gallon for gasoline, while Americans whine and bitch and move their lardy asses from their couches to their SUVs and complain about $2.20 a gallon, $2.50, $3.25 a gallon gasoline, and the rest of the world sits there and goes, "What is with you people? What makes you think that your deity came down and blessed you and said, oh, well, you get to rip off the rest of the world. You can go to war. You can kill people for oil. The rest of us are paying $5, $6, $7 a gallon. But you filthy American hogs can go ahead and continue to suck." You see what I'm saying, Ed? Even though your statement was as eloquent as could be expected from a member of the U.S. House of Representatives who's sitting there behind the people who, in front of the people who really own this country, as eloquent as could be expected, the rest of the world listens to this garbage that comes out of your mouth and the rest of the American public, and they just sit there and go, you know, the day is coming when your country is going to be reduced to nothing more than a nuclear waste dump. You people have just proven yourselves incapable of operating within the family of nations. Do you realize that, America? So you left that part out. Now, Ed, yo. We Americans are just whining like crazy. Now, I'm not talking about the truckers. The over-the-road truckers have a legitimate complaint. We Americans don't, other than the truckers. Because, you know, how many of us can get on a bicycle or just get off our padded asses and walk to the mall or the store to buy this crap and garbage from China altered food from God knows where. But we don't. You know, we will take a 400 horsepower, 8-cylinder behemoth to drive 8 blocks to go to the grocery store to buy more crap, dense food that just makes us even fatter and uglier and meaner. And so on and so forth. So if you include all that stuff, Ed, Of course, at that point, your witnesses would get up and walk out, and CNN would move their cameras over to something more interesting. But if you just put that preamble in there and then come back with your plaintive cry to these corporate killers who are sitting in front of you, who know full well that their energy policies directly impact the lives of hundreds of thousands of people around the planet, millions of people, an unwieldy number of whom will be killed, so that we here in the United States can have gasoline at, for Christ's sake, a reasonable price. What, $2.20? How about $1.40? All right? And if all sorts of Iraqi babies and Indonesian indigenous people and so on and so, if all these people have to die, if governments have to be disrupted, regimes overthrown, dictators installed, so that we can do this, well, by God, we are Americans. Now, the Brits had their chance and blew it. The French had their chance. The Dutch had their chance. And if you go back far enough, the Spaniards had their chance. I know that the Chinese are looming on the horizon, and so are the Indians. You know, the real Indians, not the American. They're looming on the horizon, so it's going to eventually be their century or their decade or whatever the hell it's going to be. But Representative Markey, what you said today, what all of you representatives said, and what the scum sitting in front of you, the mega wealthy scum who own this company or this country sitting in front of you, said, what all of you said was gibberish, nonsense, a waste of time. Except as it plays into your reelection campaigns. You know it. They knew it. The CNN producers who assigned a camera person to run this garbage knows it. The American public should know it. The rest of the world knows it. It is theater. It is crappy theater. It is obscene theater. It sucks. So, Representative Markey and Representative You and Representative You and Representative You and You and You and You, all you good and decent Americans who sit there to question these corporate executives, why don't you don't do it anymore? What's the point? You're not going to pass legislation. You're not going to issue restrictive environmental rules and regulations. You're not going to address the real problems facing not just America, but the planet. What you're going to do is sit there and do what you people normally do, posture, and make these empty, sweeping statements about the profits of the corporations who own the seats you're sitting in. That's kind of weird, representatives. But they allow you to do that so that we, the sheeple, can sit back in our SUVs and say to ourselves, yeah, you see old Ed Markey go after them some bitches today? I really liked that. Didn't you? Yes, I am glad that we have some strong Democrats and a few strong Republicans who will tell those darned old oil company executives that we're tired of it. We are just tired of this, and we're not going to put up with it much longer.
Unleaded regular, forget about Supreme. We can't afford our gasoline. We can't afford our gasoline. The prices have become obscene. You'll get screwed at the pump, so bring your Vaseline. We can't afford our gasoline.
Imagine one day being able to drive your car with hydrogen as its power source and water driblets as the output of your engine. Hydrogen is the input, water is the output, and in the meantime, your car is going.
Well, hot damn. I could get around that. Yeah. You know what, Giorgio, I'd rather be able to put bacon fat in my tank and have elves pop out the exhaust pipe, and in the meantime, you know, booger bears running around inside my Irish Dave writes in regarding the change of complexion of the terrorists that General Michael Hayden is suggesting. Irish Dave says, Mike, so General Hayden is suggesting that the Al-Qaeda terrorists should look like Tim McVeigh? Yeah, hey, General Hayden, been there, done that. Thanks to our crew tonight, Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls, Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch is the podcast manager, our senior correspondent is Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher, Bridget Wolfe, our writer in residence, and if I haven't mentioned it lately, become a Nova M founding member, if you would. Go to NovaMradio.com and get the information there. There's all sorts of benefits in doing this. There's a nice retirement plan, and if you become a member, we automatically stick $10,000 into an IRA and send it to you. I'm just kidding about that last part. You know, it is still here in the East. It is still April Fool's Day. We were going to do something tonight when we started the program in deference to this half-witted holiday, but we didn't. We discussed doing something that would have sent several of you right over the edge. And because of that, we decided not to do it. One of our listeners, Steve in L.A., would have immediately grabbed the nearest gas pipe, exhaust pipe, and started sucking on it, taking deep breaths, had we done what we had planned. And I'll just leave it at that. Kent is calling from Indianapolis, who's been holding on since forever. Kent, welcome to the program.
Michael Loy, this is the ghost of the United States Constitution, invoking the last piece of the Fourth Estate, requesting 1 minute to talk about my kidnapping on December 23rd, 1913, when private banks took over my currency and have since raided and looted my essence and enslaved the people of this nation, warring them against themselves and against those that are not their enemies, but rather their allies. May I request 1 minute?
Sure.
Sir, we must act. We must act now. We all must speak. I invoke any man, woman, or child who has given their oath, their solemn oath, to protect and defend me against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to research my creators and what they said about private banks owning my essence and my currency. They own me. I am unconscious. I still exist in flesh, but barely. Today, they insisted that I be tortured in front of you, and that very flesh worn and tattered, by insisting that the only system of the within the structure of my founding, the SEC, be entailed itself within the Federal Reserve. You must awaken, all of you. You must awaken, and you must atone for what you have done and treasonous against my existence. You must atone for what you have done to the world by sitting doing nothing. The man that owns this body, which I entail right now, is a summer soldier. He is atoning. He will sacrifice. Those winter soldiers must also sacrifice. We must decide what we are willing to do. I invoke Thomas Paine. I invoke the ghost of Thomas Jefferson and each caller that calls into any program to themselves, allow them to defend me and identify my kidnappers, the owners of the Federal Reserve.
All right, Kent. Kent? Kent?
He left this dimension.
Kent! Let me see. Rich is calling from Alabama, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Rich.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I was just trying to figure out what that deal there was, but never mind.
Well, that was.
I wonder why you complimenting George W. there so much.
What?
Why are you complimenting W. so much?
Complimenting him?
Call him a rat bastard. He's a POF.
Oh, boy.
I don't, I, well, everything about him just makes me sick, but
I hear you.
I was listening to the deal yesterday. They were talking about him throwing the ball there at the Senators game.
Yes.
And how people booed him and how terrible this was. And
yes.
I thought, you know, it ain't terrible. It shows the freedom in this country. One, he deserves it. And two, had that been China, they'd have took all the boers out in the middle of the stadium and run over them with a tank.
That's right.
Didn't they not do that like 20 years ago or a little better?
They did indeed.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking that, you know, that just shows freedom.
It was
terrible.
Yeah, we have the freedom in this country still, I don't know how much longer, to show our contempt and disgust for a leader who has done everything in his power to screw us up. I don't care who we are, man, woman, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight, Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter. Everybody in this country has felt the lash of this corrupt administration, and I will be so damn glad when they're gone. I realize we could, we may not improve with the next administration, but I damn sure know that it can't be any worse, Rich.
No, it can't. You know, I drive a truck. This trucker stinks to death.
God, you have my sympathy. It must be.
Well, luckily, I'm a Teamster. I'm not buying fuel anymore, thank God.
I was
at one time, but
that's
three times this clown has been told not to send, you know, the Mexican carriers into the state. Three times he has ignored the will of the people. He's not a leader.
No, he's not.
The leader does not go against the will of the people.
When leaders go against the will of the people enough, the people change the leaders. Rich, thanks. I got to go. I'll see you all tomorrow night. Take care. Please do take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.